Welcome to God and Country Biblical Exposition. A couple of weeks ago, I did a program concerning postmodernism. Today's program is about one aspect of postmodernism, and that's its propensity to ban speech, to prohibit certain words, to change reality or attempt to change reality by changing the language. Now, when I say postmodern's propensity, I'm referring to people who have a postmodern worldview, who believe that there are no absolutes, that moral values are human constructs, and that reality is whatever you want it to be. Now, for example, in August, the San Francisco Board of Supervisors voted to ban the use of certain terms used to describe criminals. Convicted felons must now be called justice-involved persons. Ex-cons, someone released from prison, must be called a formerly incarcerated person. A juvenile delinquent must be called a young person with justice system involvement or a young person impacted by the juvenile justice system. Drug addicts must now be called a person with a history of substance abuse. Quote from the board supervisor, Matt Haney, "We don't want people to be forever labeled for the worst things that they have done. We want them ultimately to become contributing citizens. And referring to them as felons is like a scarlet letter they can never get away from." Well, there's a whole lot that can be said here about changing the language. But at the very least, you would think that these intellectuals would realize that it just doesn't work. You can change labels, but it doesn't take long before the new words take on the same negative connotation. I mean, there are so many of our English words that used to have a good meaning, but they eventually changed the meaning to fit the situation. For instance, the word snob used to simply mean a person of lowly occupation, but then it came to mean somebody who was of a lowly occupation who thought he was a big shot. The word naughty used to just mean that you were poor. The word spinster used to mean a diligent woman. So it's not going to be long before this title, justice-involved person, is going to take on the same emotional impact as the word felon. Maybe even worse of a connotation. Even a negative mocking connotation. There's an old joke about a bus driver in the Jim Crow era, and he was dealing with an argument on his bus between the blacks and the whites. And he said, "Listen, I've had enough of the argument. Let's just consider ourselves all green. There's no black, there's white. We're just all green. Now all of you dark green people go to the back of the bus, and all of you light green people come to the front of the bus." So the moral of the story is that you cannot eliminate racism or any sin by just simply changing the language. Now, this idea to call ex-cons justice-involved persons did not originate with the Board of Supervisors in San Francisco. It came out of a guide put out by the Department of Education. And where did these thought leaders, these thinkers at the Department of Education, come up with this idea? Well, it came from academic leaders with a postmodern worldview. That language is a social construct. That language creates social moral reality rather than language reflecting social moral reality. And for postmodernists, since reality is what you want to make it to be, they believe they can change reality. And they believe that they ought to change the old reality by changing the language. Language allegedly is based upon old thinking that's misleading us, that's oppressing us, and putting upon us oppressive ideas. So if we want to be free from oppression, we have to change the language. Now, one conservative commentator said about San Francisco's new speech code, "If people aren't allowed to talk about crime, maybe they won't notice that crime exists." And that's what they're thinking. But notice, in this term, justice-involved person. You could be talking about the victim or the criminal. A victim is also involved in the justice system. But that's the point, to make the victim and the criminal morally indistinguishable, to create moral equality or moral equivalency. San Francisco officials said that the new language will help change people's view about those who commit crimes. That's the point, to do away with the definition of sin, because being called a sinner makes people feel guilty. Have you ever noticed that proponents of abortion are all about changing the language? It's not pro-abortion, it's pro-choice. It's not a baby, it's a fetus. And abortion is being called healthcare. So what is at root here? Is this biblical teaching that sinners will always try to suppress sin and try to suppress the moral law of God? And we see it done in many different ways. Now we're seeing it done in the change of language, so as people will not feel the weight of their sin. So this is Romans chapter 1, verse 18. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress or hold down the truth and righteousness. This is 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 10. With all deception of wickedness, for those who perish because they did not receive the love of the truth. This is Acts chapter 7. When the Sanhedrin didn't want to hear the truth coming from Stephen, they covered their ears. And this is John chapter 3, verse 19 through 20. Men love darkness rather than light, for their deeds are evil. For everyone who does evil hates the light and does not come to the light for fear that his deeds will be exposed. So the unsaved are burying the truth so they will not have to face the guilt of their sin. A friend of mine was speaking with a young woman who was offended by the use of the term illegal alien. And she said that she will never make another person feel less than. Look that up online. That's a new term used by leftists. Never make a person feel less than. So I suspect that at some point in this woman's life, she had her feelings hurt by moral values. And she felt demeaned by the law of God. So rather than running to the light, she ran away from the light. Rather than, as it says in Romans chapter 7, the law being holy and righteous and good, the law was the problem. And really, this is what Romans chapter 7 is all about. Blaming the commandments rather than blaming oneself. The law makes me feel bad, so the law must be wrong, and there are plenty of people who think that way. So this woman, like many people today, refused to make anyone feel guilty by the law. She hates to feel less than. And this is the path to lawlessness, the man of lawlessness, 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. Lawlessness will increase in the last days, Jesus said in Matthew chapter 24. Did you ever notice the irony of Matthew 24, 12? Because lawlessness is increased, most people's love will grow cold. The left is claiming that it is doing away with God's moral law out of love for people. Love for the homosexual, love for the illegal alien, love for the felon. Yet it's actually coldness and hatred toward God and toward God's law. Anyway, these postmodernists are insisting that ex-cons be called justice-involved persons because they're fighting against this concept of sin. And mankind has been doing this from the beginning, but now it's becoming widespread in our culture. Here's another piece of news this summer. In July, the city of Berkeley, California, in an effort to be more inclusive, the Berkeley City Council adopted an ordinance to replace gendered language in the city's municipal code with neutral terms. Personal pronouns like she, he, her, and him will be changed to they and them, which is not grammatically correct. Firemen or firewoman will become firefighter. Manpower will be replaced with human effort or workforce. And a manhole will be referred to as a maintenance hole. In total, more than 24 commonly used terms will be changed in the city's code after the measure unanimously passed. So you can imagine that some clerk has to go back and change all the documents and take out all of these so-called antiquated words. So in this case, the change of language is meant to erase gender distinctions, the distinctions that God has set up. And these boundaries are really the basis for distinguishing righteousness versus sin. The words he or she are all about knowing what is expected of us. So these people want to change the language so they don't see the moral boundaries. So think about this. If the signposts or boundaries on a piece of land are removed, nobody can be guilty of trespassing. Now, what is really ironic about all this is that George Orwell, in his novel 1984, wrote about how secular communists, Big Brother, will change the language in order to fulfill an ideological agenda. And all of these leftist intellectuals have read 1984, but it doesn't matter to them. They don't make the connection. They walk right into the path trodden by the totalitarians. And this is really no surprise because in the biblical book of the Revelation, we read all about the Antichrist and the mark of the beast. But when the Antichrist comes, people are gladly going to take the mark of the beast and they're going to follow him. They're going to ignore the warnings. People just don't make the connection. They walk right into the pit. At the end of his novel, George Orwell has an appendix called The Principles of Newspeak. At the beginning of his novel, Orwell explains that INSOC, English Socialism, has implemented a new version of the English language called Newspeak. And in this appendix, Orwell explains the intricacies of this fictitious future language, just to illustrate how leftists, even back in the 1950s, wanted to change the language in order to control ideas, so that ideas about freedom are suppressed. Orwell writes that Newspeak is the official language of Oceania and has been devised to meet the ideological needs of the state, INSOC, English Socialism. The purpose of Newspeak was not only to provide a medium of expression for the worldview and mental habits proper to the devotees of INSOC, but to make all other modes of thought impossible. Orwell explains that all party members use the language, that party members expect the language to take full control in 70 years, and they plan to change the culture by changing the next generation of children. Newspeak is ever-changing. It's in the 9th or 10th edition. Heretical words are banned. Words like honor, justice, morality. Old thinking is considered wicked and decadent. Newspeak is orthodox. Newspeak goal is to impose a desirable mental attitude. And it is not so much to express meaning, but to destroy meaning. It works chiefly by destroying, by eliminating, by lessening the language, because more language means deeper thought, and greater precision is dangerous. They cannot let people access higher brain functions. Reasoned arguments cannot be sustained because the necessary words have been taken out of the vocabulary. Old values cannot be considered because they have been made unintelligible and untranslatable. So again, this truism that logic and language and thinking always favor God. In order for Satan to win, he has to keep people stupid. Does Orwell's description of Newspeak sound familiar? Well, it's what's happening today among postmodern leftists. They want a world in which language agrees with their worldview. They want to remove the condemnation of sin. They are running from God's assessment of things. They don't want the language of Zion. They want the language of hell. So Orwell in his novel here was concerned over the change of language because for him it was the suppression of political freedom. And that's true. But being a non-Christian, Orwell didn't see the bigger picture. That this is an attempt to suppress the law of God, to suppress the guilt of sin. Stephen Hicks, in his book, Explaining Postmodernism, also has an appendix explaining how postmodernists want to change the language and ban free speech. This is seen in university speech codes. Leftist universities are banning all sorts of words, words that are considered politically incorrect, according to their worldview, words like mankind, the human race, policeman, male, female, handicapped, American. Hicks quotes the University of Michigan speech code, which forbids any behavior, verbal or physical, that stigmatizes or victimizes an individual on the basis of race, ethnicity, religion, sex, sexual orientation, creed, national origin, ancestry, age, marital status, handicapped, etc. What this code is including, really, is a prohibition against making any value judgments against another person's creed or beliefs. Hey, we can't offend people by telling them they're in error. So Hicks goes on to explain why the left is doing this. And he has some very good points. And I'm going to cover those points. But again, just like Orwell, being a non-Christian, he doesn't see the bigger reason. And the bigger reason is the suppression of truth to be free from the guilt of sin. So Christians, again, have to discern when listening to secular conservative commentators or reading their material. Always remember that they have good points, but they're subpoints. They often miss the bigger picture, the deeper motives. So here are some of the points that Hicks addresses. First, in the First Amendment, we have the right to free speech. But the left is pushing for authoritarian, politically correct speech restrictions because they put the value of equality above personal freedom. It's an inversion in the hierarchy of values, which is the source of most sin. Satan doesn't get people to completely abandon values. What he does is he places lesser values above higher values, such as personal choice comes above the right to life. Hicks uses as an example affirmative action. If one group in society has been disadvantaged by the power of another group, the oppressed group should be given extra help or privileges to even the playing field. Hence, we have racial quotas in college admissions and in hiring. The left then assumes that their worldview has been disadvantaged by 2,000 years of Christian Western thinking, so there should be affirmative action in language. The powerful, the status quo of the Western values needs to be disadvantaged. So Christian moral words should be throttled or banned. The left is seeking affirmative action in language. Now here we have to stop and laugh. Is Christian truth really dominating? You know, last time I looked, Christian truth has always been in the minority position. The lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, pride of life always wins in the culture. The natural proclivity of man is to favor sin. So to accomplish anything, Christian has to go against the natural flow. But all the unsaved have to do is go with the flow. So this premise that leftism, hedonism, LGBTQ needs affirmative action in language is actually absurd. Christian truth has always been at a disadvantage in a sinful world. But for the enemies of God, the presence of any Christian truth, even if it's in the minority, is a threat. So Hicks gets into some pretty deep philosophical thoughts here, such as the problem with leftist thinking is that they see people as members of groups rather than as individuals. people are treated as members of racial groups to which they belong, rather than according to their individual privileges and opportunities. And you have to think in terms of groups, group identity, to argue for speech affirmative action. Also part of the problem is this leftist belief in social determinism, that you are so much a victim of your environment, you need affirmative action in language to give you an extra voice. So the state needs to throttle the voice of your opposition in social media. The left also focuses on measuring disparities, differences, rather than measuring what is true and right. Because in relativism, there is no moral right or wrong. It's just who has the power. And the left is also misled into believing that speech is the same as action. Speech is considered just as dangerous a weapon as a machine gun. So if we regulate what weapons of war people can own so they don't do too much damage, we should therefore regulate certain speech that might be too powerful or too influential. So if there is a war between two ideologies or competition, the left believes there needs to be an equal playing field, equal resources. So censorship evens the match. And that's a justification for censorship. But notice that the left will only say that the match needs to be made even when they feel disadvantaged by the power of Christian truth. They will never even the playing field when they dominate. Hicks also points out that one of the underlying errors here is this notion that harmful speech is the same as physical violence. Quote, "There's a big difference between the breaking of sound waves across your body and the breaking of a bat across your head. Both are physical, but the result of the breaking of the baseball bat involves consequences over which you have no control. The pain is not a matter of your volition. By contrast, in the case of sound waves washing over your body, how you interpret those and evaluate them is entirely under your control. Whether you let them hurt your feelings depends on how you evaluate the intellectual content of that physical event, the words." Hicks also gives this sound piece of advice. "We should not be teaching our students the following lesson. He called you a racist name that victimizes you. That lesson says first that you should judge your skin color to be significant to your identity. And second, that other people's opinion about your skin color should be significant to you. Only if you accept those premises will you feel victimized by someone saying something about your skin color." So Hicks is explaining here that the left's support for speech censorship is on the foundation of their belief in collectivism, social determinism, egalitarianism, and false altruism. But again, I want us to see that that is not the core reason for their desire for censorship. That is just an ideological excuse. The real reason is that they want to suppress the truth about their sin. The appeal to equality in speech is a clever way to justify the censorship of truth. You know, these people are placing the value of equality above the value of what is right and wrong. They're leading people to think that the goal is for everyone's ideas to have an equal chance, rather than the goal being the determination of truth. And the Bible doesn't directly refute all of the less philosophical justifications. The egalitarianism, the argument that free speech is violence, because the Bible always strikes at the heart of the matter, that unbelievers are working to suppress the truth in unrighteousness. And since that is the real motive, to defeat postmodernism's attack on language and on free speech, we have to lay the axe to the root. Expose the fact that for all of these claims to fairness, to social egalitarianism, what they really want to do is silence the truth. They're afraid of the truth. Nothing irritates the left more than the truth. It only takes one person to say that the emperor has no clothing, and then the lie collapses, and that's why the truth must be silenced. The way to destroy this PC fantasy is to tell the truth. And they know it. The sword of the Spirit, the word of God, breaks the rock in pieces. Jeremiah 23. And that's why truth is the enemy of the left. And Jesus was put on the cross for one reason, to silence the truth. John chapter 8, verse 40. But as it is, you're seeking to kill me, a man who told you the truth, which I heard from God. The world is offended by the truth because they don't want the guilt of sin. They don't want their behavior to be judged. They don't want others to be more righteous than them, just like Cain hated Abel for his righteousness. They don't want the righteous to be blessed more than them. They don't want to be made to feel small. They don't want to be held accountable. They don't want to be responsible. And so what do? They do what Cain did to Abel. They kill or silence the truth and the people who represent the truth. So expect in the days to come, the banning of truth will be called the banning of hate speech. And that will be the basis for a renewed persecution of the church, as it was in the early church, so it will be at the end of this age. But we must remember never to back down from the truth, because God's truth is the power of God. Remember, our commitment to the truth supersedes the world's right not to be offended by the truth. But here's God's invitation. You can leave the lie and you can come to the truth. 1 Timothy chapter 2, verse 4, God desires all men to be saved and come to the knowledge of the truth. The truth, coming to the knowledge of truth, is the basis for salvation. And the truth is the person and work of Jesus Christ. My prayer is that you'll come to the truth. In the words of Thomas Hobbes, hell is truth seen too late. Survival is falsehood detected in time. Thanks for making God and country a part of your discipleship in the Word. The contact information is on the closing slide. Don't forget to hit the like button. Don't forget to subscribe. Earnestly contend for the faith that was once delivered to the saints. God bless.